Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. It's hard to be different. If you're blind or deaf, in a wheelchair, or otherwise different, strangers may react to you in odd ways. They may have trouble seeing you behind your disability. Or, as Pat Johansson of Gearheart found out at a park in Warrenton, they may call the police. Pat is deaf.
I was at the playground in Warrenton near the city hall with my three daughters. It was a beautiful day. They were on the tire swing, and I was pushing them for quite a long period of time. And a couple other kids came with their parents for a brief period of time, and then they left. And we continued to play. And just a moment later, a police car came up very rapidly and parked at the playground. The police officer came out rapidly and came up to me. And I said, hi.
The police officer said he had gotten a report that there was a woman at the playground pushing girls on a tire swing, and that she was intoxicated. She was slurring her words when she talked.
And I looked around and I said I hadn't been aware of anything like that. I hadn't seen anybody who appeared to be intoxicated. And the officer repeated his statement. And I said again that I had no awareness of anybody between that. And then he looked at me and said, have you been drinking? And it still didn't occur to me that he had this perception that maybe I was the one. So I had a bottle of water in my hand. I looked at it and just finished drinking some water. And he again said, had the report of an intoxicated woman. I said, I've been pushing my girls on this wing. And then, all of a sudden it occurred to me, I said, I'm deaf. I talk different. I've been pushing my girls on the car swing. I've always been deaf. I talk different. Maybe these parents thought that because my voice sounded different, I was intoxicated, but this is just the way I sound. And he didn't really say anything, but he asked for my ID, and I gave him my driver's license. He ran it. He called it in. He ran it, and he gave it back to me. Then he called the station. I can hear he was talking with people, but anyway, he came back, and I asked him again, what was the description of the person, And then he just said, have a nice day, and he left, And I just stood there.
Yeah.
I just stood there, and it took a little while for the whole experience to sink in. I was standing there just thinking, the parents were here, and they heard me talking to my girls, and they thought I was drunk, and they called the cops. On me?
Yeah.
Does my voice sound that bad?
Well, first, no, it doesn't.
And I know it doesn't. I know it doesn't. Many people have said it. You sound like you're German. Where are you from? I'm from here. I've always had to explain to people that I sound different because I'm deaf.
Right.
And that happens a lot. I'm used to that. I'm okay with that.
I was thinking before we came to talk that must be a sort of daily thing for you to have to explain your voice to people. Whenever you meet someone new.
Well, most of the time people don't have to ask. They see my hearing aids.
Right.
They see my hearing aids, my cochlear implant now. They see them and they figure it out on their own. Or they've been exposed to enough deaf people that they know what a deaf voice sounds like. But this is the first, and it really bothered me after I left and from thinking that it could have been very different. What if the police officer had not been so nice and professional? What if he had really come loaded for bear?
Right.
What if somebody came along and took the kids because the mother was drunk? I started thinking, well, this could have been very different. And I was very worried, thinking these parents are going home. They're telling their kids, their friends, their family, and the kids and their family and friends are all going to start talking about the woman that they have to watch out for at the playground. And I like that playground. I want to be able to go back and not have to worry about somebody calling the cops on me again.
Right. And he comes out and he sees a woman at the playground who somebody else has reported may be intoxicated pushing kids. And he doesn't know that you're a woman with a master's and a doctorate and a teacher and all those other things. You just sound different.
Yeah.
So, I want to find out a little bit more about this woman at the playground. Now, you went to Warrenton High School.
Yeah, I grew up in Warrenton. Yeah, and my family had been in this area for quite a long time. I went to Warrenton Elementary School, the junior high. Warrenton High School. I graduated in 1977.
And you haven't been deaf all your life. When you were a small child, you could hear okay?
I've always had a hearing issue. Mm-hmm. My family has a lot of deafness in it. And I was born hearing, possibly hard of hearing. And then by the time I was five, I was profoundly deaf. And profoundly deaf means you really can't hear a thing without your hearing aid.
Right.
But I heard okay at the time that I was learning speech and language. But my voice will always be different.
Yeah, and from reading, I guess I understand that for people who are deaf from birth, it's harder to learn to speak because they never actually are able to hear speech.
Yeah, that's right.
And on the other hand, for people who are hearing people most of their lives who become deaf, mm-hmm. it's more difficult in a way because they don't have any of the tools that you have. They don't have lip reading, they don't have sign language, they don't have, nor does anyone around them. Mm-hmm. So they become very isolated. Now, you have other people in your family who are deaf. Are they at sort of different stages, or do they all kind of have a similar experience to what you had?
Pretty similar experiences. My sister and I had very similar experiences growing up. We went to the same school. She was 2 years older. Mm-hmm. My daddy's deaf, and he had a business in Warrington for many years, Johansson Little Shipyard.
Oh, yeah.
He built a lot of fishing boats. And my aunt is still living in Australia. She's very deaf as well. My dad and my sister actually got cochlear implants a few years ago, and I just got cochlear implants a couple of years ago.
Tell me exactly what that is. Now, you've had cochlear implants. What does that mean?
It's an implanted device that goes inside the ear, and the cochlea.
Kind of an electronic assist, sort
of? Yeah, electronic assist. And, my nerves are damaged at the end. It's a genetic thing. And the implant, the electro sensors, whatever, they bypass the damaged portion of the nerve. See, with hearing aids, I could always hear a lot. But because my hearing loss was so profound, the hearing aids had to jack up the noise a lot.
Yeah.
And the louder, the more they have to jack it up, the more distorted it is.
Yeah.
But the implant bypasses the damaged portion of the nerves. So the quality of sound is far better.
Well, give me some sense of what it is that's most difficult for a person who is hard of hearing or who is, I guess mostly I'm talking about hard of hearing because completely deaf would be different. But it's in groups that more difficult to distinguish one sound from another.
Yeah, groups are the most difficult situation to be in.
Or noise.
Because often you have more than one person talking at the same time. And even if people pause in between, it's still difficult because lip reading is a lot harder than people mm-hmm. think it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're lip reading and you have some hearing, you're lip reading and you're trying to put together what you're seeing on the lips and you're trying to mash it up what you're hearing. And you're trying to do that at the same time. Person, they're talking.
Yeah.
And you're trying to chain it all together and make sense out of it.
Yeah.
And it just takes time. And in a group, it's just really difficult.
While Pat's ears don't work very well, there was nothing wrong with her brain or her drive. This was the little girl who read James Michener's Hawaii when she was 7 years old. When she went off to college, she earned her bachelor's degree, then a master's degree, and then went to Washington, D.C., and got her doctorate at George Washington University. Before all of that, Pat had some difficult times as a student at Warrington High School, but she also got support and encouragement from some people she still thinks of as her heroes.
One person I will mention by name because she gave me positive encouragement is Jessie Wallace, who is still living, and she's in Seaside. She's 90 years old. She was the librarian at the elementary school. And I love to read. I go in there every day, and she would help me get more books to read. And I read all the time. So she always encouraged that in me. And then I encountered her again at the high school because she was the PE teacher, the coach for all the sports. And we became close at that time. I was very involved in sports. She always encouraged me, and she never let deafness bother her.
Mm-hmm.
Now she just talked a little louder and made sure I was looking at her. I know she said there were some situations where she had to tell some other students to change their ways because they were making fun of me.
Right. Which kids...
Well, yeah, you know, kids.
With somebody who is in any way different, kids sometimes have no sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can be hard.
Yeah. The sports really helped me a lot because it didn't matter that I was deaf. And when I started winning races and making a lot of points and breaking school records and getting my picture in the paper, people stopped laughing.
Right. They could relate to you in a different way then.
That was a little more respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was on the honor roll every semester, too.
I guess one of the reasons I'm enjoying talking to you is I think your experience has to do with deafness, but I think all people who are different in some way mm-hmm. experience some flavor of the same thing, where a lot of us are just, we don't know how to be with somebody who is different, someone who is deaf or someone who is in a wheelchair. It makes us a little uncomfortable. We don't know exactly what to say or how to act or whether we should mention it or not mention it. And so people tend to just kind of, either like kids, they go to one extreme and they tease, or they go to the other and they avoid. And either one is not very good for the person in question, is it?
No. It's hard for everybody, you know. I mean, sometimes I see people looking at me and I can see maybe they're kind of wondering about me, whether they should say something to me. And sometimes, you know, I will say hi, you know. And there's a lot of people, you know, who have learned a little sign language. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will come up and say something. You know, you find that having dog, you connect with people who have dog. Well, I have girls. I talk with a lot of people at playgrounds. Yeah. You know, our kids start playing with each other, so we have to talk to each other.
Well, I think
the girls have been a good icebreaker for me. And often I will make the first step. If my girls are playing with somebody else's kids, I will go over to the parents and, you know, say hi, you know, how old are your kids? And get something going. You know, often people aren't afraid to take the first step, though. I take the first step.
Right. And once that step is taken, once someone gets to know you as you rather than as the deaf person, then all that stuff goes away.
Yeah, it does.
I think the athletics probably helped with that because people were able to relate to you in a different way all of a sudden. And it's like, oh, yeah, she's that gal who can run like heck and has won the medals. So also at school, I mean, you had this wonderful teacher who was very librarian, who was very encouraging, but you had some others who didn't think you could do that well because of your deafness.
Yeah, well, there was this one teacher who I will not name.
No.
But he taught, like, modern problems, and he was also the high school counselor. And he had a big, bushy beard. Mm-hmm. So bushy that, really, I couldn't see his mouth. And he would come to class and give pop quizzes. You know, unwritten, but oral pop quizzes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't understand the question, you know. And I would ask him, repeat them, and he would get angry.
Yeah.
And one of my friends would write down the question for me so I could answer them, you know. He wasn't a good teacher.
No.
Oral. Teachers who give pop quizzes do that because they're not prepared. They don't know what to do, what they're supposed to talk about, so they give a pop quiz and waste 20 minutes on that. Well, he was also the high school counselor. So when I was getting ready to go to college and filling out the forms and all that for the ACT and the SAT and whatever, he was involved in that process in some way. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me, you shouldn't go to college. People have always been helping you. When you get to college, nobody's going to help you and you're going to fail.
Mm.
And I was shocked. I was shocked. That was the first time an adult has said anything like that.
Well, what did you major in college? And you got your bachelor's degree and then a master's and then went on to get a PhD. What was the process there and where were you heading with that?
Well, when I graduated from Warrenton High, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a PE teacher, so I think my first major was PE. And then I switched to something else and then something else, social work, and I didn't like that. And I decided, I had one more year of college, so I decided to major in psychology. So I got my bachelor's in psychology, and from there, I decided to go into graduate school. And for a while, I wasn't sure what to do. And a friend of mine who was not deaf, he said he was tired of seeing deaf people major in graduate school in education and counseling.
Mm-hmm.
He said I should do something different,
mm-hmm.
like get an MBA, a master's in business, or a master's in public administration. And that with that, I can make a difference mm-hmm. at the policy-making, the government level. So I got the information I needed and applied to graduate school and master's in public administration. I went through their program. And my favorite teacher called me in my last semester, and he said, Pat, have you thought about getting a PhD? I thought, me? I didn't know any black people with PhDs. And he says, if you have a PhD, you can really make a difference in your community. Mm-hmm. People will listen to you. You can do research. You can teach at a college. You can do these things that will make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to get a PhD, and I went out to Washington, D.C., and I began working my PhD at George Washington University. Went through the program, and I got my PhD.
And what did you do with that, then? What's your career been?
Well, first, I went into the government and then an internship program, almost the same as the White House Fellowship, mm-hmm. and called the Presidential Management Internship Program. And as part of that, I rotated through different federal agencies. I ended up in Congress for about 6 to 8 months. Worked for Senator Hatch for a while when he was the chairperson of the subcommittee on the handicap.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in some legislation that related to persons with disabilities. And that sort of led directly to my next job, which was as the director of the National Commission on Education of the Deaf. And that was established by Congress in 1988 to make a national study of the quality of deaf in America and to make recommendations for improvement. And that was like a nearly 2-year job because it was a temporary commission, but it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. And the members of the commission, you know, they met regularly and did a national study, and we put the report together, and a lot of recommendations were made that ultimately had a big impact on the deaf community.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I was offered a job at Gallatin University teaching, and I started teaching business and did that for 12 years.
Can you tell us what you wish that hearing people understood or knew more about deaf people?
The first thing I understand is we're just like you. You know, some of us are nice, some of us are not so nice. We have family, we don't have family. We do the same things you do. A lot of us face barriers and frustration in society. And a lot of those barriers are attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
That people have the ideas that deaf people are this way. Deaf people are dumb. If you don't talk well, you're not smart.
Right.
Because our society places a lot of value on speaking well. Well, I know deaf people smarter than me, and they don't talk. Intelligence and speech are not really related.
Right.
Language is the important thing.
Well, I understand for deaf people who don't talk, it's not because they are lacking in the vocal mm-hmm. ability. It's because often those are people who are deaf from birth,
mm-hmm.
and they've never heard a voice. And so it's difficult for them to sound.
Oh, yeah, very different thing.
And so they're sort of embarrassed about it, and they just find he's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my husband didn't speak. He was much smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
No, but he had language, and that was the important thing. And sign language is a language.
Well, I think that's, yeah, and that's an important thing, that speaking is one way of communicating.
It is one of many.
But there are many, and I mean, the story of Helen Keller is certainly one that if we think back to that, she couldn't hear, she couldn't see.
And all that is amazing.
And yet, because she had a patient and caring teacher, she was able to go on and accomplish, you know, to go and get an education and accomplish all of these things because she was able to communicate by touch.
Yeah, and guess what?
Way.
My deaf grandmother met Helen Keller.
She did?
Yes. I'll tell you something interesting about my deaf grandmother. She was the first woman in Oregon to get a driver's license. And you know what? I mean, this is my theory. Because she was deaf, you know, she couldn't pick up the phone and call anybody. She had to drive over and bang on somebody's door.
So she was the first woman?
Yes. I didn't know that until, you know, when the Astoria Bridge was dedicated way back in 67 or something like that. My grandmother was one of the dignitaries because she was the first woman to get a driver's license.
Mm-hmm. So speech is only one way of communicating. For a deaf person, what are the primary means by which, a profoundly deaf person would communicate?
Oh, my husband wrote to people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just sit down with somebody and write back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I never saw anybody who wasn't willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now, you know, technology has made a huge difference in what's happening with deaf people communication, like internet, email, text.
Right.
I text my plumber to come over. I text my electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. I don't have to ask somebody to make a phone call. I don't have to use the relay to make a phone call. You know, I've noticed here on the code, people are not familiar with relay calls. That's when I I use my computer or my TV, a video phone, mm-hmm. and I get a picture on the screen of an interpreter, mm-hmm. and then the interpreter calls the business or the person or whatever and interprets what I sign, mm-hmm. and then she signs what the other person's saying. A lot of people on the coast are not familiar with that. Mm-hmm. I call and they hang up.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as I have email and text, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. When with signing, you don't have to spell every word, do you? No. You can sign words or sign broader meanings.
Most of your fingers spell the proper noun.
Mm-hmm.
But there's signs for thousands of words.
Well, one of the things that was really important to you was reading.
Mm-hmm.
What about the process of learning to read for a deaf person? Is that different or harder?
Well, I learned to read when I was 3. My mother taught me. She felt that my sister and I, if we couldn't learn by hearing, we could learn by seeing. And so she was reading to us from an early age. And she was mostly focusing on my sister. I was sitting there, too, and I was learning. Mm-hmm. And I was reading when I was 3. And when I went into school, I was already reading at an advanced level. And I think I mentioned to you, I read Hawaii by James Michener when I was 7.
Which is astounding.
I know. When I look back on that, there were some things and then that went over my head, but I read the book and I enjoyed it. And I still love James Michener. I have all of his books. But, I read constantly all the way to school. And when I was on the track team or in the volleyball team or the basketball team, all the kids are on the bus and they're all talking and laughing. And I was in there
reading.
With a book, reading. And we'd often be driving home in the dark, and I would be trying to turn the book around so I could read it, So, they were talking and laughing, but I was learning.
Well, it's kind of astounding in a way that you had a counselor in high school that even though as a 7-year-old you read James Michener's Hawaii, thought you probably couldn't make it in college.
I know.
Is there something that you would like to say or you would like people to know that we haven't talked about yet?
If you see me at a playground, come up and say hi. Don't be afraid. I haven't bitten anybody yet. I have no plan to do that. No. Come and play with my girls. They have a great time at the playground with the kids that they meet. I enjoy meeting the other parents and talking with them and getting to know them. Anytime you see a deaf person, don't freak out. If you know a little bit of sign language, go up to them and try to talk a little bit. And don't look at communication as having to be one particular way. There is no one else way to communicate. Whatever works.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough. Don't freak out if somebody asks you to write something down. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and don't try. If somebody doesn't understand you, don't try again and again and again to say it louder,
louder
and louder and louder.
You have gotten to the point, I think, where you sort of accept those extra difficulties without making much of them. But it struck me in thinking about it that every day you probably, as I mentioned earlier, run into someone who doesn't know you and you have to explain about your voice. And you have to, it's just that extra little thing you have to do.
Yeah, and I'm so used to that it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a little more on one day then another to go ahead and make the first move and talk to people. And I have 3 little girls and I need to do it for them. Not just for me, but for them and for other deaf people in the area.
Mm-hmm. How are the girls? Are they, any of them show any evidence of hearing loss?
No, they don't. And they all know, they can sign quite a lot. They don't always sign, but they sign quite a lot. Sometimes they teach their friend too how to say things in sign language.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that people with kids tend to come together and share people with dogs.
Exactly.
But that there is also a deaf culture, and people who have deafness can be with other deaf people, mm-hmm. and it is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how to communicate.
Yes, and it's easy.
And to be understood easily. So there is sort of a culture that develops. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of group in this area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a group in this area called, I think, the North Coast Signers or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they get together every month.
Mm-hmm.
And basically have lunch, let them talk. They get caught up with each other and get their monthly dose of deaf culture and good communication, But, as part of deaf culture, deaf people tend to marry other deaf people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the shared experiences, the shared language.
Mm-hmm. And that just has to be somehow almost like you can relax when you are in that kind of environment
Oh, yes.
Because the barriers are down.
Yeah, you know, when I was teaching at Gallaudet, every November and December, students would come into my office and say, I don't want to go home for Christmas. And at first I had to ask them why, but later I didn't need to ask. They said, I don't want to go home. I can't communicate with anybody. I'm left out in the family. Mm-hmm. I just sit around and nobody talks to me. Mm-hmm. I wish I could stay at Gallaudet. And I thought it was so sad. I know how that feels. You know, the families out there need to learn to communicate with their deaf children, whether it is in sign language or orally, whatever, but there's just too many families out there that aren't really, perhaps not doing enough. Right. And there is a perception we talked about before that spoken language is the only way to go. But that reflects a very pathological view of deafness, where you look at the ears as something that have to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at the child as a whole person with different types of needs, emotional, social needs. Things weren't too bad for me here in Warrington because it is a small town and a small school. So I didn't get lost, as a lot of other deaf kids would in a big school. If I had gone to a large school, it would have been a lot different, I think. But I had small classes, and everybody knew who I was, and I think that was a big help for me, in addition to not being deaf from birth. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who is profoundly deaf and really has a struggle understanding, parents need to look at the whole child.
Yeah.
And make the determination about what will work best, and not be too focused on hearing and speech. And there's nothing wrong with sign language.
Pretty important, though, that mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle and everybody make an effort to learn some sign language.
Yes.
So the child is not...
Yeah, even a few basic signs helps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and more sensitivity. Yeah.
And there are some things that go beyond language, like sitting with someone and giving them a hug and spending time with them and so on.
Yeah, I mean, even now it's still not the easiest thing for me to be with my extended family. It's better if I get people one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And with my implants, I'm doing better in groups than I did.
Mm-hmm. But when the whole family gets together, there's so much hubbub and noise and, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I do better one-on-one, and it's nice if people recognize that and make sure they make the effort to have some one-on-one time. Like I said, it's easier with the implant, but it's still an issue.
Is the tendency in a situation like that, where there's lots of noise and so on in a family gathering or someone, for the deaf or hard of hearing person to just kind of pull back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I did that all the time when I was growing up. What I did was I'd eat my dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas dinner. I'd eat my dinner, and then I'd run, find a book, and sit down and read.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you had the patience to come and talk with me. Thanks.
Well, that goes both ways.
Thank you for listening. Join us again next month on the third Monday at 9:30 a.m. for another edition of The Human Beat. This is Roger Rocca.